This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 168.
Hello, and welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about empowering you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we bring you a listener Q&A about running injuries as we talk with special guest Dr. Ben Chateau. And in the quick tip segment, Angie will talk about moves that strengthen glutes, hips, and hamstrings. And to get our help in your training for a marathon or half marathon, find out how to connect with us and our awesome online community when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. Okay, so Angie, at the time of this recording, you're going to be leaving this coming weekend, going down to Phoenix for the Lost Dutchman Marathon. How are you feeling about that race coming up?
It's coming up really quickly, but I'm excited about the quick trip down there. And I'm going to have a nice little MTA meetup on Saturday evening for dinner. So looking forward to meeting some folks in the listening audience. Another exciting thing this weekend is that the U.S. Olympic Trials Marathon is on February 13th, and then it'll be followed by the LA Marathon on February 14th, the next day. So I'm sure there's some people out there who will be going down to spectate the Olympic trials and then run the marathon on Sunday. So it'll be an exciting weekend.
Yeah, can you imagine just how focused these athletes have to be in their training going into this? I know there's one athlete in particular who I've been trying to get on the show, but inside sources have told me how utterly focused she is right now on the Olympic trials and is not going to be doing any interviews until afterwards. So that's the way it's got to be. I understand.
We'll get in line afterward, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, this is huge.
Definitely.
So good luck to all of the athletes here in the U.S. who are going to be going to Olympic trials, hoping to get a shot at running in Rio later this year. That's going to be exciting to watch the Olympics this year. I haven't even thought about that very much.
Yes, I always love Olympic years.
It's like the only time of year like where we pay for cable here at our house.
That's right. We get it for like a month and then shut it off again.
Every 2 years to watch the Olympics. So anyway, what else is going on out there in MTA land there, Angie?
Well, we've got some shout outs. We'd like to congratulate my coaching client, Sandy. She ran the Icebreaker Indoor Half Marathon and Full Marathon a couple weekends ago. So on Saturday, she ran the half marathon around a track.
Wow.
And the second day, she came back for the full marathon around the same track. Finished both.
She's a glutton for punishment.
She stayed really strong. So, I can sympathize with what it's like to run that many laps, but she really did great. So very proud of her.
Because you did an indoor marathon a couple years ago. Have you ever had inclination to do that again?
It's not really on the top of my to-do list. It's kind of like, been there, done that, check the box. I would not say never again. But, I prefer to run outdoors. I can say that with confidence. And this note is from Kirk in the Academy. He says, I'm happy that my cardio held out for the entire Las Vegas Big Game 10K, and I was able to earn second in my age group. So we'd like to say congratulations to Kirk. He's just coming back from a major surgery, and really taking his rehab seriously, building back his running base, and obviously just getting out there and not letting any grass grow under his feet.
And he's a fast guy. I mean, he's done a sub-3-hour marathon. So now he's just, I mean, after surgery like that, just having to build back from zero pretty much.
Yeah, he had to start walking and really working on form issues and building strength. So it's been a long journey, but it's exciting to see how he's making such great progress.
Looks like he has a really great attitude.
Definitely. This note comes from Jill. She says, thanks, Coach Angie. I ran my best marathon yet, despite having been laid low by shingles for the last couple of weeks. I can't wait till my 50-miler. And she ran the Surf City Marathon in California, which was just this past weekend.
Wow. And you're going to help her train for a 50-miler?
That's right.
And shingles. Can you run a marathon with shingles?
It would probably be very uncomfortable if you did, but you know, she took it easy and, put some extra rest into her training and was able to, come back strong, obviously, from that setback. And this last note comes from Nikki. She says, I recently ran my second marathon to qualify for Marathon Maniacs. And she's number 12,400, which I thought was a great number. Easy to remember. She says, the race was way hotter than it has been lately and way hillier than I was prepared for. But I crossed that finish line all the same. Then today I woke up not really feeling the half marathon I signed up for. I was kind of tired and burnt out from the marathons last month, but I went anyway. I got to the start and the weather was perfect, and I realized a couple miles in that I was keeping a pretty good pace, and because I was not running a full, I could really push it. Well, I pushed myself all the way to a 2:02 finish, an 8-minute PR. Sub 2-hour half marathon, here I come.
Well, that's awesome for getting out there on a day where you weren't really feeling it, you know, and how many of us have had days like that, but you just start running and then a couple miles into it, usually, I don't know, for me at least, I'm like, oh yeah, this feels good. This is what I need to be doing today, and I'm glad I'm out here doing it.
And with her perspective of just running two marathons, you know, a half seemed a lot more manageable. So it was really exciting she was able to walk away with a new PR.
Yeah. I love how that works. I remember after I ran my first full marathon, how easy a half seemed to be after that. It's a great advantage.
That's right.
Even if you just want to do half marathons, which is cool because half marathons are a lot of fun. I prefer to do halves, actually. It's good to run at least one full marathon to have that perspective.
That point of reference.
Yes. Well, congrats to all of you out there who are pushing to new milestones in your health and fitness and in your running. We're glad to be on this journey with you. We know you're going to really enjoy this episode. It's all about running injuries. It's always a hot topic for long-distance runners. We want to do something special. In the past, we've done Q&A episodes, but we wanted to do just a running injury-specific Q&A and bring on an expert, Dr. Ben Chateau, who's a physical therapy doctor and friend of ours and fan of the podcast. And we talked to him quite a while, so we're actually going to break this up into two parts. Part two will be in episode 169, and you won't have to wait very long to get that one. We're going to release it pretty close to this episode. And particularly, you're going to hear Dr. Ben answer questions here in part one about glutes, hamstrings, and muscle imbalances. He'll dive deep, and then at the end of our conversation, Angie's going to come back and we'll talk about some moves that you can do to strengthen those areas. So let's go ahead and get into that conversation with Dr. Ben Chateau on running injuries right now.
Well on my way, well on my way.
All right, we're on the podcast now with Dr. Ben Chateau. He's a physical therapy doctor from Boise, Idaho. He's a marathoner, CrossFitter, and a contributing writer on the MTA website. And you can find him at thephysicaltherapyadvisor.com. So, Dr. Ben, welcome back to the MTA podcast.
Hey, thank you very much, Trevor, Angie. Nice to talk to you guys again.
Well, we are talking about running injuries, and we thought we'd do a Q&A style interview. So we solicited questions, and we've done this through the years. We've done this with Angie. We've collected questions for her, but we thought, let's just bring on an expert who can talk about injuries, running injuries specifically, and gather questions. So we got quite a good bunch of questions here from folks in the community, and we'll just start firing them at you, okay?
All right. That sounds good. Yeah, you were nice and gave me some of the questions, so they look fantastic. I'm excited to go through them.
So Mayreed and JJ both want to know, do you have a major symptom or sign that would tell us if an injury needs a few days of rest versus therapy or visit to the doctor? Like, is there any sign that would indicate to a runner what to do in that situation?
Well, I wanted to start off by just saying, just a quick disclaimer, you know how that goes. But all the answers are kind of meant to be general information and general advice, not really specific to one particular person or their condition. So just kind of keep that in mind as we're going through these things. The first question is actually one of the harder questions on the list, actually, about a major sign that might tell us when do you need to intervene, you know, with a physician or a therapy visit or just take a few days off. And a lot of it kind of depends on the injury and the pain level of the injury. And so each location on the body is a little bit different in how it might respond to an injury. And so what you need to look for is just symptoms that maybe the injury is worsening, and that might be pain is increasing, you're losing motion in that particular joint in that area, you're having a hard time maybe walking, putting weight through that area, you start seeing a lot of swelling, you'll want to intervene with, you know, with what I call the PRICE method, which is protect, rest, ice, compress, and elevate. Now, that doesn't work for some conditions. You know, if it's your low back, you're not going to be elevating your low back. But, you know, for ankles and knees and things, it works well. So my biggest advice is just to use some common sense. If it's really hurting badly and you can't put weight on it, it's really swollen, it's not moving normally, you probably need to get it checked out just to be safe. If it's more of just an achy, nagging thing, then a lot of times you can start with some self-treatment and self-management, and then you just look for progress. If it's improving, you know you're on the right track and just keep doing what you're doing. If it's getting worse or not really changing after the first week or two, then you might need to seek some additional advice for that, because really the body should be making changes towards improvement within those first 2 weeks. And if you're not seeing anything, that's a big signal that there might be something more going on than meets the eye that would need to be checked. And, you know, worst case scenario, you go in, you have it checked, and they say, no, it's, you know, it's what you Googled. You had it right. And just kind of continue on with the program. But, you know, there's always the off chance you have a stress fracture or something more serious, and you would want to know that sooner rather than later. So I'd say use your common sense and just kind of look for those signs there.
JJ goes on to ask, she says, I'd like any input on how to pick a good physical therapist once you need one, as at different times in my life, I've been to several and some seem to be more successful at athlete rehab and working with runners and others. Some tell me to stop running or stop doing whatever sport I'm doing, and that's not the answer, but I'll do whatever else to stretch, strength, et cetera, that I'm given. So talk a little bit to that if you would.
Yeah, that's a good question. And just like in any profession, you know, there's subspecialties within that profession. And so I have some good advice on this one. The first thing I would say is you need to find a therapist that's a runner. You need to find someone that understands the sport, participates in the sport, knows what you're going through. Not to say that there couldn't be other therapists that don't run that have a lot of information, but I just think it's easier to relate to someone that actually participates in your sport that you're performing.
Yeah.
There's a couple of distinctions or designations I would also look for that might give you an idea. They have some specialty training. First one is OCS, which would be an orthopedic clinical specialist. And so you'd see PT, OCS, or SCS, which would be a sports clinical specialist. So you can look for some extra specialty certifications. And then I think the biggest advice would be to go to the local running store and ask around who do other runners use? Who do people like in your area, and get some good recommendations there? Because someone I think that's going to be sympathetic to your cause and what you're trying to go through is also going to be highly involved in the local running community. And so you want someone that's in there and just participating with the events with you. And I think it'll just help you relate. And so much of this is just being able to relate to the person and talk with them and really get through what your unique goals are. So I would start with that. I mean, you can also, if you have no running stores or no idea where to start, then I would just start with the APTA website, which is the American Physical Therapy Association website. And they have a section there for non-clinicians. It's just for the general public. And you can search for specialties in your particular area. So you can put in physical therapist with those OCS or SCS designations and find people in your area that way too.
Ben, you could probably get a lot of new customers just standing at the end of a marathon handing out business cards.
Exactly.
I know. And there's, you know, and I would imagine, it's been my experience at a lot of races, you'll see, you know, the local therapist there with their tent, maybe offering some free massage or something like that. Because it is really a good idea to get new clients in that way.
Yeah, or stick your card in the swag bag, you know, somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it'd be good. People may be like, oh, I don't need this now, but later they might think, where was that card?
And usually on the you know, the bags and on the shirts, they'll have a lot of sponsors, and there's almost always a physical therapist and chiropractor and different things that are sponsoring those for good reason. There's usually a good rate of return.
Yeah, you're right.
On those sponsorships, so that's good.
This question comes in from Sharon. She says, I have a partially torn tendon in the gluteus medius that attaches to the greater trochanter. After 7 months of physical therapy, chiropractic, and cortisone shots, I've greatly improved. Now I've been running 2 to 4 miles over the past 2 to 3 weeks, but during the last run of 5 miles, I had pain again, which lasted several days. Will I be able to run longer distances again without having surgery?
Well, so we should start with, like, what is a gluteus medius and what is a trochanter?
Yeah, this is a great question. So gluteus medius, it's just one of your glute muscles. It's more a little bit on the side of the hip than it is right under and sort of under the glute max, which is the bigger one that everyone's familiar with. And it's a really important muscle because it helps your single leg stance. So when you're standing on one foot, it's the muscle that keeps you from collapsing onto one side. And it attaches to the greater trochanter, which is basically that knobby bone you feel on the side of your leg. That's the trochanter. And that's where that particular muscle attaches. And this is also a site of a lot of weakness for runners that gives them a lot of knee pain and other issues down the chain. So it's really a critical muscle. And it sounds like if she's already gone through 7 months of rehab, it must have been a pretty significant tear. They usually grade these in grade 1, 2, or 3. A 1 is a small tear, usually pretty good to rehab, doesn't take that long, a couple months. A grade 2, which is most likely what she's had because she's had 7 months of therapy, cortisone shots, but no surgery. So we can assume it was a grade 2 because a grade 3 would have been a complete tear and that would have definitely needed surgery. You need this muscle attached and working well. What's concerning to me is the way she's going about the rehab portion of it, and this happens a lot with therapy, is they'll get to a baseline of rehab, okay, we're done, but they don't take the next step is to return to sport. And there's a big gray area in how this needs to occur, and it sounds like this is what's happening to her. So she's had 7 months of therapy, whatever that might have been, probably a lot of pain management for sure if she's had cortisone shots, and now she's tapering back into her running, which is fantastic. But she's only been running 2 to 3 weeks is what she says. And she started off at 2 to 4 miles. I don't know what her base was before, but she's going to need to take a long time getting a new running base back. So if she pushes herself too hard, too fast, she's either going to re-injure this particular muscle or she's going to injure something else down the chain because the muscle's not functioning well yet. And so the fact that she was already trying to push herself up to 5 miles, I think it's too much too soon is her biggest problem. She's only 2 to 3 weeks out. Even for a new runner, you know, if you kind of take a big step back in 2 to 3 weeks, most of people are not going to be running 5 miles. It's just too much too fast for a base. So she needs to think of herself almost as a new runner again and start much slower and slowly develop that base. My recommendation would be if she's already doing 2 to 4 miles, that's great. And as she starts to progress the time and the distance, I would do half regular running and half run walk. So when she hits that 3 mile mark, she may have run the whole 3 miles. That's great. But now she's going to revert to a run walk protocol just to give her a little bit more time. She gets the time on her feet. She's increasing distance, but it's not as stressful to that particular injury, and she can slowly build up her base that way, probably a little faster. Otherwise, she just needs to stick with the 2 to 4 miles for, I'd say, at least 6 weeks and then slowly taper it up. But I think if you do the run walk, you can probably taper it sooner. And during this process, she really needs to be looking at some specific strengthening exercises too. So she needs to really be working on her core strength and she needs to really be working on that hip strength. And because the glute medius was the injured muscle, we want to make sure obviously you're working that muscle, but also some of the ones that might help stabilize that same joint. So your piriformis would be an example, some of the rotators of the hip that turn the toe outward, called your external rotators. So you want to be working on those deeper rotation muscles just to give it more support as it's rehabbing. Probably a few other things I'd keep in mind is your running surfaces. There's going to be a big deal. You do not want to be running on uneven ground while you're tapering up through this, because the more uneven the ground, the harder that glute medius is going to work.
So no trails.
Yeah,
probably.
I would stay away from trails in the short run. I mean, not forever, but definitely in the short run. A running track would be good, or just a softer, you know, dirt surface, concrete. I'm never a real big fan of if you can avoid it. And then also her running technique could be an issue for her too. So if she has a very narrow base when she's running, so meaning your feet are landing very close together, or like if you have drawn a line and you're always landing right on the line, that's going to put a lot more pressure on the glute medius too. A wider base is going to help take some of that pressure off. And so I would run with just a slightly wider base. And then I would also be thinking about my cadence. So there's a lot of research on cadence that if you can increase your cadence even by 5%, it really helps reduce the risk of injury. And so I would be focusing on those things as she's trying to rehab and just take that extra time for the base, because I think that's the number one thing for her is she's just pushing it too hard, too fast. And if she's getting several days of pain after that run, that's a big red flag that she's skating on thin ice. She needs to really back that down a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's excellent advice, because as runners, sometimes we can really be really bad patients. You know, we have maybe built up to that half or full marathon before. And so our head says we should be able to do that higher mileage. But then our body says, you know, no, I need more time to get back there. And like you said, it's not saying that she'll never get back to that spot, but just really take it slowly so that, you know, she doesn't have to have surgery at some point.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Runners tend to push themselves too hard. And if she's a decent runner or did a good job at cross training, she probably has a good aerobic base still, but it's two separate things. Her strength base and the leg base is not the same as her aerobic base, which might tell her, man, I could go for miles here. So she just has to really be careful. It's not worth re-injuring. 7 months was a long time to go through this, taking an extra month or two to do it right so you don't go down the surgery and route and start over is important. So take it a little slower so you can get better faster and not risk the re-injury.
Well, let's talk about glute muscles for a second. Obviously, they're very important for runners. How common is that? How often do you see runners come in who have torn something back there? And how does that happen?
You know, I wouldn't say that's a common injury. That can happen from a fall or a trip. Every once in a while, you might get an overuse type thing that's going to cause that particular injury. But most of the time, that's from a traumatic event where you would have fallen, tripped, you know, done something like that, jumped off something funny. Yeah. But it doesn't usually just occur from repetitive motion. You should have been having signs way before that tour that, you know, things are going bad. So on average, that one's not one that would just happen on its own. And it's not the most common injury that you'd see in runners at all. In fact, it's pretty far down the list. But it is a very serious one because of the muscle and where it's at. That one can really sideline you for a really long time.
Speaking of glutes, Britt wants to know, she'd love to hear about sleeping glutes and what can be done to reawaken them.
Yeah, I love this question. It kind of sounds funny, first of all, but don't awaken the glutes. So you hear this term a lot about sleeping glutes, and it's not that the glutes aren't working. It's just they're not as active as you would want. And the way I describe it to my clients, it's like a dimmer switch on a light. If you dim the switch down, that's the neural input going to the glutes. It's just not as much as it would normally be. And then if you dim the light back up, which is more neural input to that particular muscle, it's more active. The most common reason for them to be quote unquote sleeping is just back to the sitting thing. People sit too much. Yeah. You're sitting on your cheeks all the time. And they just don't get the same neural input as they would normally get as if you were up walking around. Standing desks are great, but again, if you're just standing and not moving, they don't tend to help as much for this problem, though they are better in general. So it's more about movement when it comes to the glutes and trying to develop those motor programs over time. So just like that dimmer switch analogy, you still want to keep the motor input or the neuro input going into those particular muscle groups. And the only way to do that is by using them. And so you want to use them frequently. And the more frequently you use them, the more likely they are going to stay activated, which is exactly what we want. And so, in a case like this, if you have this issue, which comes up a lot, in, like you said, in runners, but I think also just in general, people tend to not use their glutes as much as they should, is as part of your warm-up is activating the glutes. What I tell people to do for their warm-up is get the cardiovascular part of the warm-up done, so light jog, brisk walk, and then go into some specifics for the warm-up before you actually embark on your training run. And it's a little more time for people, but this is, I think, the best way to do it. And you might do some squats get on your back, do some bridging, single leg deadlifts, anything that's going to activate the glute muscle specifically and just kind of wake it up and say, hey, here we are, we're working today, and then progress into your run. While you're running, you still want to be thinking about that push-off, you know, portion of the run, because that again is hamstring and glute. So you're still trying to keep your mental focus on using that muscle while you're trying to run. And then it's just a matter of doing it over time. So one time is not going to fix this problem because you're sitting all day long. So you really need to work on squatting, walking, bending throughout the day to try to keep that input going to the glutes. It's an important thing because if you can get to use your glutes more, you're going to really increase your speed, particularly when you're if you're running uphill, you need your glutes. And so you want to get them working. But it just takes a little bit of time and you just need to try to avoid the sitting and just think about whatever you can do to activate those muscles prior to the run. And then of course, just throughout the day.
So it basically feels like your butt is asleep.
Well, I don't think people really...
Like it's numb.
No, it's not like you sit too long and you can't feel, you know, it's more like it's just your butt doesn't get to activate those muscles back there. Like he said, the dimmer switch is down, you know, so you don't have strong muscles back there. I kind of think
how would
like,
you know?
Well, like when you go for a normal run, you typically don't feel your glute muscles engaging, you know, for most people. Mm-hmm. But if you did like a lower body strength training workout, and then you go for a run the next day when you're still sore, you're going to feel like your glute muscles back there.
Yeah, every step.
You're going to be like, oh, that's where they are, right back there. You know, uh-huh. Most of us are pretty weak in that area. So it's not like they are just numb. It's like they don't get used enough.
And most people won't know that they have weak glutes. You can run without using your glutes much. And a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. So I tell people, assume that they're not working well. And the nice thing is if you start activating the glutes and doing some of those things, it's a positive benefit for your running potentially, but also for back pain prevention and other things that require good glute strength or good posterior chain strength. And so you really can't go wrong by just trying to activate your glutes more, especially in today's society. It's just you can pretty much assume most people are going to have some degree of issue with it. And so it's more of a prevention thing, if anything else.
Do you find that a person is weak higher up in the kinetic chain, then it just starts to show up lower down, you know, whether, you know, if your glutes or your core is weak, maybe your knees, maybe your ankles, things like that start to get off. I know one lady asked a question about muscle imbalances, and she's noticing them in one leg, particularly Johari. So kind of let's go into how muscle imbalances happen. And is this genetic or is it just something that can happen from injury? Is this a common thing? Do most people have muscle imbalances, I guess?
Yeah, that's another good question and it leads in perfectly. I would say most people probably do have muscle imbalances of some kind. To go in with what we were just talking about, sitting and poor posture is probably the number one reason why a person's going to develop, you know, a muscle imbalance. So we all have chronic positions or chronic things that we do, whether we always cross our right leg over the left and not vice versa, or we sit on the couch only on the right side and bend our legs underneath of us and not the left side. And so all those things over time.
Excuse me while I correct my posture.
Sit up straight. We're all readjusting now. Everyone driving or running, everyone fix their posture real quick.
Yeah.
But it's such an easy answer, but it's such an important answer because it's what we're doing most of the time. So sitting, you know, crooked to the left eventually is going to lead to an imbalance of some kind. And so we need to be at all times trying to work for that symmetry. And I've had a lot of clients where just changing the side of the couch they sit on can correct some of their pain because now they're going the other direction from their imbalance. That being said, there are some genetic differences. I mean, there's a lot of structural differences among people that might predispose them to issues. I think her question was about tight ankles. Depending on how the ankle bones are structured and your, you know, Achilles and calf tightness, some of that can actually be genetic. I mean, I've seen lots of folks, that's the way they're made. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't work towards improving those imbalances, especially if you're starting to get pain because of them. Always when I'm working with folks is just trying to go back and work through those asymmetries and movement patterns is a good exercise to do and really should be what you're doing with part of your cross training program is finding the areas you're weakest at And then also working towards just being symmetrical in our movement patterns and how our body is feeling. And if we got a weak left side or a weak tight side, then you spend extra time on the left and you can, you know, let the right side skate by just a little bit. But it really should be part of that cross training protocol, really.
That's what I think a lot of times doing balancing exercises can reveal sometimes weaknesses or inequalities. And like you said, doing like a single leg deadlift, anytime you can do a single leg thing, you know, it can be really excellent, because sometimes if you're doing them together, then the more dominant leg will take over and the left leg, if that's the weak side, won't do as much, you know, because it's relying more on the right leg. So I think, like you said, that's an excellent
thing. Yeah, you know, running such a one-legged sport, right? I mean, half the time's on one leg, half the time's on the other. So you need to be able to do equally what one side does versus the other. But you'll see that a lot with runners, just watching them from behind or from the side, they'll be favoring one side or the other. And those are those things that need to be addressed, because sooner or later it will lead to an overuse injury. But most of that stuff's preventable. The hard thing is just taking that time to do it ahead of time before the injury, get the prevention in there. And then just remember, it's small changes over time that's going to yield the long-term results. It's not a quick fix type situation. It's definitely just kind of being mindful of where you're at, and it's going to change throughout your lifetime and your work and your, as your body ages, that's all going to be a factor as far as the imbalances that need to be addressed.
Well, this would be a good time to tell you about this episode's sponsor, Carbon 38, but I think I'm going to let Angie tell you about it because they make ladies' clothing.
That's right. We'd be a little bit worried if you were testing out women's activewear, I suppose.
Yeah.
No, Carbon 38 is a great shopping destination for fashionable, high-performance women's activewear. So that includes running, yoga, just looking cute and sporty around town. And one thing I like about them is that you can find your basic pieces there that are really comfortable and functional, but you can also find some really unique pieces. So you're not going to show up at your race or at yoga class with like the same running tights as everyone else. They've got some really fun styles on there. And I've been testing some of the Carbon 38 running tights, wearing them to yoga and for running. And I love the fact that they stay in place, they don't slip around. I was also able to get a pair of 2XU compression tights from Carbon 38. These are just great. I've worn them on a couple of long runs, really help my muscles feel supported. And of course, for after long runs or after races, compression pants can be really great for your recovery as well.
So if you're one of those ladies that likes to wear yoga pants all day, every day.
Guilty.
Check out Carbon 38. And if you go to their website, carbon38.com/marathon, and you'll get 15% off your first purchase. So that's carbon38.com/marathon for 15% off. And we appreciate them sponsoring this episode.
We had a couple people with a question about proximal hamstring strains. Taylor says, I'd like to hear about how you know if a hamstring strain can be self-treated versus whether you need to go in for physical therapy, and what you would recommend for treatment.
Yeah, hamstrings, they're tough because if a bad one really can sideline you for a long time. And so the first question I would have for them is, how did this happen? So she's talking about a proximal hamstring strain, which would be usually up real high, clear up. Most of the time when I see them, they're clear up in the glutes almost, where those, if you feel back there, you kind of feel a bone that you sit on off to each side of your tailbone. And those are your ischials, or ischial tuberosity. And the hamstring strains can start, that's where the hamstring starts, and it can happen right along that area. And then, of course, any place down the line for the hamstring. And so my question would be, how did that happen? You might see it sprinting. You can see it sprinting. You might see it sprint, you know, coming downhill faster than you're used to. I've seen them, people going uphill and slip as they lose their footing, or on ice, something like that. So usually, again, it's from doing something you're not used to doing. And you want to look at that mechanism, because that might give you a clue as to how severe. So like the other question about the glute medius, muscle tears are graded 1 through 3. A 1 is a minor tear, painful, not too many fibers have been torn. And that's the most common one, of course. A grade 2, you're going to see more of that tendon or muscle torn. And you should see some signs at that point. There's probably some bruising that occurs. There will be a lot of pain and weakness and loss of motion. And these can go 50-50. Sometimes they need to be fixed, and sometimes you can rehab them without the surgery. And then, of course, a grade 3 is when it tears completely. And those are really a bad surgery to have to go through because of the location. It's a long rehab. And I've worked only with a couple of folks that have actually torn it completely, and it takes them a long time to get back to where they were. And so I think that you need to look at a mechanism of injury and try to determine, do you think you have a grade 1 or a grade 2? If it's a grade 1, you can for sure self-treat this, no problem. If it's a grade 2, you might need a little bit of help. It just depends on how you're healing. And so you want to look at, can you walk normally? Was there a lot of bruising? What was the intensity of the pain? How is it resolving since the injury? If it's been a month and you're still having trouble with it, that's not a good sign that you're probably going to need some more help with it. Even a minor strain can take a month or two to really improve all the way to where you feel like it's back to normal. But a grade 2, it can take 6 months, 9 months sometimes, depending on the severity. And even like pro athletes, football players and stuff like that, if they get a bad hamstring strain, they're out for a long time and sometimes even a season, or they never quite measure up during that season like they would have normally because they just don't quite get all the way back. The treatment for these initially is you need to rest. You don't want to push it. You need to give it some time to heal. The first week or two for sure should just be keeping the motion, keeping the pain down, any swelling. So you'll use ice or heat, whatever you prefer. Gentle massage is fine, but I wouldn't encourage a lot of stretching. Just keep it mobile without overstretching, and definitely avoid anything that causes pain at those first couple weeks. As it progresses, then you can get to more aggressive therapy. You can use the foam roller. You might get a masseuse or a physical therapist. They'll do some deep tissue techniques, and that can be very helpful. You can start to gently stretch, but I wouldn't, again, this isn't the time to be very aggressive with the stretching. And if there's any pain with the stretching, you need to discontinue it. You just go to the edge of pain and let it hang out for 60 seconds, 90 seconds, but I wouldn't push into a lot of pain, and I wouldn't do a lot of dynamic or ballistic stretching either, where you'll be swinging the leg aggressively or bounding or any real active stretches at first until you're well into the rehab. And then, of course, once you're working on the foam rolling and things, you got to start working on the strength of the hamstring. And that's going to start very easy at first. But eventually you need to progress to squatting, deadlifting, single leg deadlift. And then, of course, always working on the core. Anytime a muscle attaches to the pelvis and the hamstring does, you really need to think core training as part of the recovery process. The good part of the core training is you can usually initiate that a little sooner, especially from the abdominal side. But eventually you need to work backwards and work on that posterior or the backwards side, and that would include hamstrings and glutes. And so use pain as your guide. If it's hurting, you really have to back off when you're progressing through this one.
I've seen some of these proximal hamstring strains really turn chronic because, initially you kind of have the issue, and you back off a little bit and then the pain gets more manageable and, they kind of forge ahead, but they never really take that time to let it heal. And so, like you said, it can take months at that point in time, really, because you never addressed it in the first place.
Yeah, I see that too, where it does go chronic. And it's really unfortunate because you never meet your potential when you don't get this thing resolved completely. And that's what happens. They'll just kind of string it along for months and months and months, never, operating maybe at 75, 80%, but they could have been at 100% and progressing in their training, and it's going to hold them back until they really take time to deal with it. If it's gone chronic at that point, you would still work through the same phases of treatment as far as the foam rolling and the stretching and then the strengthening. And usually you can get it to turn around depending on how severe it was, or you might need a little bit of help. But it's definitely a point well taken. You need to take the time to rehab these things. And it's unfortunate that this particular one could take a long time, but you really need to take that time to do it.
And for those who, I guess, forgot or weren't paying attention in science class, the hamstring is that muscle that runs from where to where.
So you've been thinking this whole time?
Where's the hamstring? No. Well, no. I just...
It's a good question.
I just feel like it needs to be said.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did talk about it attaching to the glute, but not that it goes all the way
down. I just want people, like, if you can help them right now, reach down and feel for their hamstring.
Yeah.
Describe that for them.
Yeah, no, good question. And this is, again, this is it's a big deal because this muscle is a big muscle and it crosses two joints. And so that makes it more difficult to deal with. And so this muscle, the easiest way to find it is if you feel in the back of your knee. Sorry, I was getting a pop-up message. You reach back to the back of your knee.
I thought you were reaching.
I was doing that too. Yeah, I was doing that too.
You're like, wait, no, it's gone.
It's been removed. And you'll usually feel some gristly little tendons in the back of the knee, and those are your hamstrings. And there's two branches of them that split about midway down, and they attach to either side there. And they actually cross the knee joint, and that's how your knee or your foot will flex up towards your backside. Now, if you follow that big muscle all the way back, clear up to your butt area, your buttock area, and you'll feel a bone where you sit on it. We call it your sits bone sometimes. It's your ischial tuberosity, and that's where that muscle ends. And so a proximal strain would be close to that bone, clear up in the buttock area. I probably see that more often than a distal, which would be more towards the knee injury. But with a hamstring pull, it could be anywhere from the back of the knee all the way up into the buttock. And so it really just depends on mechanism of injury and bad luck, you know, if depending on where it's at. Because the further it goes up into the buttock, it can be difficult to treat. If nothing else, it's just hard to reach.
Angie, have you ever had proximal pain?
Yeah, proximal hamstring. Yeah, it's one thing I've dealt with through the years off and on. So that's why I'm, you know, warning people that they need, if they find this issue comes up, they need to take the appropriate rest time and deal with it. Because
What have you typically done when you felt something come up?
Well, I definitely have had to back off with my running a lot and cross-train more and try to just let it rest for a while. And then eventually, once it feels better, I try to get in there with a lacrosse ball because, for me, the foam roller, I've just got enough on my backside that the foam roller doesn't really get in that deep. So I'll take a lacrosse ball and use that for, you know, more deep muscle release and everything. But
yeah,
it's definitely one of those. It's a pain
in
the butt.
It truly it is. And the lacrosse ball is probably the best option if it's very proximal. And then if the more it goes in the muscle belly, the foam roller can work, or the lacrosse ball works well too. What have you found that was your cause of injury?
You know, I could never really pinpoint it to anything other than, you know, I do a lot of marathons. So yeah, I've never really been able to pinpoint an injury that was specific. So that was kind of frustrating for me because it was like, well, just kind of slowly crept up and everything. One thing I did find was really important for me was to do less sitting, because sitting a lot and then having to stand up, that would be, you know, a big source of pain. So I found that, you know, I tell people that have sitting jobs, if they can get up and walk around at least every hour or convert more to a standing desk, that can really help these kind of injuries, because it's not just putting so much pressure on that area that, you know, it doesn't need.
Isn't sitting just killing us all, or what?
It really is. That's a whole other podcast. But yeah, the sitting's the new smoking for sure, as the joke goes. And Angie's right. The sitting is a big risk factor for this injury, because the sitting just leads to tight hamstrings. So it shortens because your knees stay bent. And so when you do have to stride out for any number of reasons, whether it's just normal running and you're stretching it repetitively, which it sounds like Angie's was just, you know, more overuse, which would have been, you know, towards that grade one strain, versus you're running along and all of a sudden there's a big pothole or a cat or something and you have to jump over them. And then that quick stretch was more than that muscle is ready to handle, and it can just tear. So I've seen them from that, and a lot of falls too. Like this time of year, if you're running out on the ice and you fall and things stretch in ways that you're not used to stretching, things tear. So,
and I've even seen people who, you know, take on something like a yoga for the first time and they really don't listen to their body and they try to do too much, you know, they overstretch certain muscles, and that can be a risk factor too. So like you said, it's really important that you only stretch to the point where you just feel that tension and don't feel any pain, because you can do more damage by too vigorous stretching.
Yeah, and I think hot yoga is probably the worst of them all. I like hot yoga. I think it's a great form of exercise, but your body's warm and limber more than usual, and so you get in some poses deeper than you would normally, and you'll feel it then.
Oh, no.
You'll feel it the next day or two or week or two, depending on how bad it was. So you have to really watch out for that if you're not used to doing those types of exercises.
Yes.
But they are good. I mean, they're a good form of exercise.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and end part one right there. In part two, we're going to bring Ben back on the podcast to talk about feet, knees, and IT band. But Angie, for a minute here, let's talk about glutes, hips, and hamstrings. Let's just go back through again real quick and just tell us maybe some good exercises people can start today to strengthen their glutes, hips, hamstrings, because, I mean, who wants a breakdown in your glute, you know? Or
well, and the thing about these muscles is that they're foundation for lower down in the body. So if you can have strong glutes and hips and hamstrings, then you can often prevent knee issues, IT band issues, ankle, feet. So, you know, the stronger you are up in your core area, the better off you're going to be as a runner and for any other sport as well.
We're trying to make you into a hardcore runner here, folks.
That's right. So some great exercises to strengthen these areas. One would be the glute bridge. So with this one, you're going to lay on your back with your arms at your side, and you're going to bring your feet in close to your glutes, and then you're going to press through the feet and bring your hips up. So you can look online for a picture of this. And you just want to squeeze through your backside with this one so you can really feel those glute muscles working. And then for more challenge, you can straighten one leg so you're just balancing on one leg or the other, switch. And there's also some exercises you can do like raising and lowering. And really, you'll feel a good burn through the glutes, hips, and hamstrings with that one. Another great exercise is called the single leg deadlift. And so you're basically going to stand on one leg, slight bend in the knee, and you're going to hinge forward from your hips and just kind of basically lean forward into a deadlift and come back up again, repeat that, and then do it on the other side. So here you're working on your balance and your strength, and you can add weights for more challenge to this one. The third exercise is bird dog. And so with this one, you can get down on your hands and knees. Make sure your hands are underneath your shoulders, your knees are underneath your hips. And then you're going to lift your right arm straight out in front of you and extend your left leg straight behind you. And then you really want to squeeze through your entire backside and can hold that for 30 to 60 seconds. You can also just raise and lower into that position several times to strengthen those muscles as well. And then, of course, you want to repeat on the other side with the left arm and the right leg to even up your strength there. A fourth great exercise for this area would be called hip hikes. You basically are going to stand on a step, and you're going to have one leg on the step, and you're going to have the other hanging off. And then you're going to just lower and raise that hip with the leg that's hanging off. And you can kind of balance yourself if you want to lightly touch a wall with one hand. But if you can do it without hanging on to anything, that's really going to increase your balance and also going to work your strength in the hip. And just continue to raise and lower that hip off the side of the step. If you can do it 15 to 20 times to start out with, that would be great. You know, work all the way up to 30 times this side and then repeat on the other side.
Okay, so there's some great ways to strengthen glutes, hips, and hamstrings. You know, another great way to strengthen glutes, Angie, is to find something thin, like maybe a fly swatter, place it between your butt cheeks, hold it there for a couple hours, maybe try to go maybe a mile or two without it falling out. I heard that's a great way to strengthen glutes. We think about that.
Where did you hear that from?
It's my fertile imagination.
I can't even. That's the worst idea for all day. Frankly, disturbing.
Squeeze those glutes tight. Helps with you have yoga pants on.
Okay, now people are imagining you with yoga pants on with, yeah, I don't even want to go there.
Do they make yoga pants for guys?
I'm sure they do, yes. Tights.
I guess I would be okay with wearing compression tights after a marathon. Or maybe if I was just hardcore going for speed and it was cold or under the right circumstances, in other words, I might rock some compression tights. Would you find me attractive in compression tights?
No, I would not.
Well, that's it for this episode. I hope you're out there staying injury-free and practicing good injury prevention. If you are injured at the moment, don't get discouraged. There is a way you can get back on your feet and get recovered. It's going to take time. Got to be smart about it, but you can do it. Many people have, and you can too. And stay tuned for part two, where we're going to be talking about injuries that pertain to feet, knees, and IT band, as well as some other stuff, as we continue doing Q&A with Dr. Ben. And if you want a great free resource about injury prevention, head over to our website, marathontrainingacademy.com, and you will find the Runner's Toolbox, which is a downloadable document that Angie created with her top recommendations for inexpensive tools to help you prevent and treat injuries. It's called the Runner's Toolbox. You can find it over on our website. Thanks again to Carbon 38 for sponsoring today's episode.
That's right. Carbon 38 is one of the best online shopping destinations for fashionable, high-performance women's activewear. They partner with fitness professionals to test and model all of their apparel, and they really want to empower women to live their healthiest lives and feel and look amazing while doing it. So go to carbon38.com/marathon to receive 15% off your first purchase.
Well, stay safe, everybody. Keep being awesome. We'll catch you on the next episode, and just want you to remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.
Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. No way.